Welcome to the show, Alice. First of all,
Thank you.
happy Thursday. How's the day going so far?
Not gonna lie, it's not been the best day. It's pretty crap weather here in Edinburgh. We've got a bit of a storm at the moment. It's just raining and it's been horrendously windy. I went down to the track to do just like some strides and a bit of a tempo, and I almost cried. It was so disgusting. So
Right, I shouldn't smile.
yeah, I mean, but that's just Scotland for you. Makes you tougher, I reckon,
Absolutely spot.
Hardy Scots.
Got back from Scotland Tuesday, Monday or Tuesday, and the fact that you said that you nearly cried, I can relate to that because I know exactly the weather that does bring you to the verge of tears. It's that cold wind that just breaks you in two. It's
It literally
awful.
just like gets into your bones, and even when you're back in your flat, I mean, obviously, like I live in a student flat, like it's freezing at the best of times, but you get back and you're just like frozen solid. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to some summer weather, hopefully on the horizon soon.
Yeah, we're going to get into your sort of plans for the rest of this year, Alice. But in terms of where you're at with your training right now, obviously for any viewers that aren't aware of, some of your accolades that you've done in the past year, where are you currently at with your training? What are you, working towards? What, give us a bit of a lowdown.
Yeah, so kind of, I guess not norm, like this wouldn't be kind of a normal season just because the cross country's gone on for so long now, just because they had to change where the world champs was going to be. So I'm still kind of doing cross training because I've got world champs now in just over a week. So there's still quite a lot of kind of cross country style sessions, volumes. Probably not too dissimilar to what it would be like during the track season, because cross country is 10K for me, and that's kind of the distance that I would be training during the track season as well. So yeah, like mainly just kind of a mix of grass, road sessions, and then yeah, kind of I go to the track at the moment just once a week, but that will probably go up to like twice a week when I start focusing more on the track.
The cross country season is an interesting one for us Brits because it can start off. You have that weird, like, little road relay series season that falls in between track and cross country. If
Yeah.
you do those competitions around sort of September, and then it's straight into cross October, and then like really fast races November. Then Christmas time is just, unless you do a 10K on the road, it's just dead. There's nothing
This is
going on.
nothing.
And then
Yeah,
it's like
literally.
then there's indoors, so it's like oh, do a bit of that for some athletes. But then the championships aren't actually until like really late February and even into March. Like, you've got World Cross
Yeah.
next week. So I suppose my question is as an athlete that loves the cross country and can also run really quickly at shorter distances as well, looking ahead to the track, how do you kind of go into a cross country season and gauge your effort across it? Is it a case of just ticking off the weeks and being as consistent as possible? Or do you try and peak multiple times within a winter?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something I've not like mastered just yet. I think the start of my cross season really wasn't too good, but I've kind of had a second season as such, where I've actually been able to kind of show my form. I mean, ideally you'd kind of want to do two good seasons, like a kind of a pre-Christmas, looking at the kind of like Euros, and then a post-Christmas again, like if there's a World Cross that year, then maybe kind of trying to peak towards that. But it's tricky, and I think, like cross country is, it's demanding, it's not the most like enjoyable training for some people, so I can understand why people decide to go indoors after Christmas. For me, I just can't think of anything worse than running on an indoor track. I think 5K is definitely like my shortest distance that I would do. And I just don't think I would enjoy it that much. So, I mean, that being said, I kind of said that I would never do track, and here I am. So,
Here you
never say
are.
never. Yeah.
And with cross country training, as you just said, it is demanding. It isn't the nicest. Are there any particular types of training during the winter that get you the fittest? Is it grass sessions? Is it hill workouts? Is it long runs? What is it that you're like, yeah, I'm getting fit on the grass now. I'm ready for a quick cross race.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's like doing those kind of long tempo sessions. They get you fit regardless, like no matter what time of the season it is. I also think at the end of the day, like there's certain things you can do to improve your like strength on the cross. So like doing your grass sessions, you know, making sure you've got a few hill reps in there and stuff as well. But I think really like a lot of cross country, a lot of British cross country now is just so fast. Unless the mud's like really churned up, which, you know, everyone's kind of, it's fair game at that point. It's just who can kind of get through it the fastest. But I think most of the time it's just about, yeah, kind of doing those long tempo sessions and just like doing them week in, week out. That's what I found just got me to kind of my fitter self. And that would be the same throughout cross and track season as well. Like, it's just a bit of a staple in the week, like you just got to get it done. But I kind of enjoy it, so yeah, I don't complain too much about that
And you said there you're in a university accommodation up in Edinburgh. What talk us through what your current setup is in terms of, you know, what you're studying and the group you're training with. How does that all look for you right now?
Yeah, so I mean, I say I'm in a student flat. My flatmates are students. I'm not a student actually, or not really. I basically graduated last year from Edinburgh University. I did an undergrad in sports science, and then basically this year I wasn't too sure exactly what I wanted to do. Obviously, I knew that there was a possibility of kind of signing with a professional contract with running, so I kind of gave myself this year to really like figure out what it is I want to do. So I'm still living with students in like a student, like just a student flat in Edinburgh, which is really nice. Two of them are runners as well, which is good, and then two aren't, so you get a nice little balance there. But I'm also doing a like an online part-time master's in sports nutrition with the International Olympic Committee, which I'm really
Amazing.
enjoying. Yeah, no, it's good. It's I definitely like I'm the kind of person that I can't just run. I would just get so bored. And I need to have something else like stimulating to do alongside of it. So that's nice because I can do it whenever I want at like anywhere, anytime, basically, which is quite ideal. And it's not too like limiting. Like I could probably get a job alongside of it. I could probably go and do like a master's of research or something as well. So it gives me the opportunity to still kind of decide if there's something I might want to do next year, whilst also giving me something to do right now.
And you said it there about the possibility of signing a professional contract. You've done that. You're now a kip run professional athlete. How does it feel when someone says that to you?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I think I'm probably still struggling to like grasp with that idea of like being a professional athlete. It's just never something I really thought I would do. Like I never thought I'd have it within me to kind of run the times I ran and achieve what I did. So it's still something I'm probably like getting used to. And when people kind of refer to me as that, I'm like, oh, that's kind of odd. But it's yeah, no, I mean, I'm enjoying it so far. I definitely, as I said, like I like to do things outside of running. But it's also allowing me to not have to kind of get a 9-to-5 job, because at the end of the day, I also don't know what I would do if I had to find a job at the moment. So yeah, it's allowing me like a huge amount of freedom and kind of to see basically what I can get out of running in the next few years, which is really cool.
We talk to a lot of athletes that have all, you know, sort of different levels at the sort of top end of the sport. Some super professionals that have been contracted for 10 plus years, but we also speak to a lot of British athletes that have just signed or they're in their second or third year, and it's really common that they say the first year is your hardest. And I've delved into that with a lot of our guests because I want to try to give our listeners an understanding of what being a professional athlete is all about, because I think that you can watch the Diamond League on the TV, or you can watch the London Marathon, and you see these professional athletes at the front, and that's what you set your expectations of what it's like to be. But it's actually not like that at all for a lot of people. So it's really kind of wholesome to hear you say that you're still adjusting to that period of being a professional athlete. And from my experience of being an athletics fan and a complete geek, especially with British athletics, the 2, 3, 4 years after signing is when athletes really skyrocket. It's almost like that sort of teething year that they need to just find their feet of this new structure. I am a professional athlete now. Like I have a job. Like my job is to run. So
Yeah.
the fact that you are running so well in your first year, that must excite you to kind of like, I mean, first of all, it must excite you to think, what can I do? But also, does that does that give you the motivation on the days that you can't be asked to train? Is that what gets you out the door?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think sometimes there are certain things that I have to just frame as like, this is my job. Like I'm at the end of the day, I'm getting paid to do this. Like you wouldn't just not show up to work if you didn't enjoy, you wouldn't just like not go on that work trip because you don't want to have to go there sort of thing. Like there are certain things that you just have to do because it's part of your job. At the end of the day as well, I think like I do really just enjoy running. Like I actually just love it. I think if I didn't do it, I would be very sad. So I think it's partly motivated on those tougher days by like knowing that it is just like, it's like your 9 to 5, you just got to show up. But once I'm out the door, I always kind of, I'm quite happy just enjoying it.
That's a cool dynamic to add to the sort of conversation that you go through in your head. As all runners that will be listening to this go through, whether you're super speedy like Alice or you've just completed your first part run, there are days when you're just like, oh, I can't be bothered. I really can't be bothered. It's raining. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you can add that dynamic of, this is my job. I have an employer. Yeah. Like, I literally get paid to do this.
Yeah, and exactly.
You can use that as a strength. Like in some jobs, like that can be seen as a bad thing because, you know, I don't want to do my job today. But in actual fact, you're using that to your strength. And the fact that you said that you do just love running is great. That whole thing of, you know, I remember growing up as a kid, it was always like, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. So
exactly,
that's kind of the life you're living like right now, which sounds amazing.
Yeah, and I think that's probably why I actually struggle to see it sometimes as my job, because I'm like, oh, it's just like my hobby, it's just something I really like to do. And then I'm like, actually no, you are like, this is a job, this is like my occupation. Yeah, it's definitely something I'm still like getting to terms with. I think it's probably just, maybe it's just the way that kind of society brings you up, but like being a professional athlete isn't necessarily like what people think of when they're like, oh, what job do you want to have when you're older sort of thing. But it's nice that I can, for the moment anyway, call it my job and yeah, kind of never work a day in my life.
Well, things have been going well this year. 2024 has been an absolutely stellar year for you so far. I was doing some research on your sort of progression, and it has hit 100 times. It's just gone thump off the ground. You know, talk to us about some of the results that you've hit recently. You've had that massive PB in Valencia. Now, I've got this beef with PBs, right? Over distances between the road and the track. I think that if you run a PB on the road, for me personally, I think that's a new PB. Your track PB is a different event. So in Valencia, you ran 23 seconds off your PB, but it was actually a minute faster than your road PB the year before.
Yeah.
That was what I was looking at. So that was a massive step forward. And then you've had some good results on the cross country as well. World Uni Cross Country Champs, you took silver there, third at the Intercounties. Talk to us about how you've kind of like looked at the winter and thought, okay, it's my first winter as a professional athlete. What am I targeting? And how are you going into races as a professional athlete? Because that must bring some form of pressure when you're lining up against these other athletes.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. I think I probably put more pressure on myself than like the pressure from that I get from Kiprun, which we can like talk about a bit more as well. But I mean, I feel like they're not kind of expecting me to hit all these times or like get all these bests, because they kind of, yeah, they're like, you're literally moving out of the under 23 category. Like it's a bit of a brutal world, especially in kind of endurance running at the moment. So they just wanted me to enjoy it and not get injured and just kind of progress sustainably, which is really nice. But yeah, I definitely put quite a lot of pressure on myself. I think before Christmas, I put so much pressure on myself and I wasn't enjoying it as much. And kind of after Christmas, having kind of just figured a few things out and kind of got myself into a bit of a better place. Yeah, on the start line for Valencia, I was like, you know what, there's like no pressure here. Just try and run like sub 33 would be good. Like, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, it would be a new road PB. So yeah, when I got to like 9K and I looked at my watch. I was like, oh my gosh, right. Okay, we're on for a good time here. So yeah, no, I think having that race, I really needed it. I needed it like more for myself than it wasn't like I needed it to kind of prove to people or prove to the brand that I'm worth having. I think it was I needed to prove to myself that I can run those times. And yeah, in the middle of like a cross country block as well, which was quite nice. Like it excites me to see, I guess once I've got a bit more, maybe like 5K speed in there to see what I can do on the track. But yeah, I think I didn't put too much pressure on myself, but in the back of my mind, I was like, I just want a good run just so that I can tell myself like I deserve to be here, sort of thing.
Yeah, and obviously you've had the call up to World Cross in Serbia. That is next week.
Yeah, next week
Next
for
week.
Serbia.
So really at the business end for that now. Can you give us some insight into how you maybe tapered down into that race? And I am changing the topic slightly, but I mean going back to training slightly, because with such a packed schedule with cross country races this side of Christmas, how do you work with your coach and say, right, guys, we've made the big one. I want to run as fast as possible. I want to feel amazing on the start line. What are you doing in these last sort of 7, 10 days?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the key thing is to not change too many things. I think it's such a kind of, it seems like the right thing to do. Like you get into a GB team and you're like, oh, like got to start training really hard now. Like only got 2 weeks to go, sort of thing. Like I always see it as like the hard work's done. Like you've made the team. Clearly your training's working. So just stick with it. So training's not changed at all. Since I got the call up, and even kind of before then, like it's just been the same throughout the whole winter. In the next kind of few days, I guess, once it gets to about 7 days out, everything's just a little bit more reduced. Like my Sunday long run normally will go down to kind of like 90 minutes, instead of 2 hours, and then all my easy runs throughout the week normally have about kind of like 25 minutes taken off of them, which is quite nice. So yeah, like everything's just brought down a notch. My last session will be on the Tuesday, and yeah, I'll just very much run that within myself as well. I quite like it. Like it's what I've done. I know it works for me. I know some people don't like a taper. Like you definitely feel a little bit kind of like groggy towards the end of the week because I think you're used to doing a bit more. But a taper definitely does bits. So yeah, kind of looking forward to next week actually.
Yeah, we love a taper. If you
Yeah.
like tapers, it means you train it hard. That's generally the
Exactly.
rule. So World Cross, like, there's so much history of that event, and it can be a bit hit and miss for British athletes. You can have British athletes that run really, really well, but also European athletes as a whole can just get swallowed up. There are a
I
lot of
know.
fast athletes, depending on the course, the distance, the terrain. It's all horses for courses. But looking ahead to this race in Serbia, can you give us a bit of an insight into the conversation you've had with your coach on, okay, coach, what am I going for here?
Yeah. I think it's really hard. At the end of the day, it's like it's my kind of first time running as a senior for the cross country for GB. So it's gonna be hard. I know it's gonna go off really fast, and I think I just have to kind of back myself that I work well through the field. So like kind of take the first 5K, you know, I guess in the kind of the same way that Liverpool cross country always goes off like mental, and like your first K is something like a 3 minute K, and it's like Jesus Christ, I've got seven more of these to do. But yeah, you've just kind of got to go with the flow with the first kind of K or so, and then I'm definitely going to try and ease off if it's still just going mental, and then just try and like work through the field, kind of 6, 7, 8 K in, and yeah, hold on for dear life towards the end. But I think the plan's not really changed as to what it would be if I was running in a British cross. You know, like obviously you've got some very fast girls in the field, but I'm just kind of hoping that people might blow off a bit too soon and I can just hold
Yeah, you've got this, Alice. I've got full faith.
on.
They will blow up. I'm
Yeah.
certain of it. And then post World Cross, what's what's going to be the next race? Are we going to see it at Highgate again?
Yeah, I'm gonna be at Highgate,
Oh,
which
yes.
should be good fun. Yeah, I'm very excited. Highgate's probably is one of my favorite races. It makes 25 laps go so quick. Because yeah, 25 laps is a long way
Horrible.
on the it's pretty nasty, it's
I
pretty
say it
boring.
like I say it like I've done it. I've never done it. I paced half of Highgate once and I got to like 4K and I was like, oh God, guys, you gotta go.
No,
You gotta keep going. I'm done. I'm checking out.
it's kind of mental. Like, I genuinely don't remember it even lasting more than like 5 minutes, which is crazy. Because I've done 1500s when I was younger and like felt like they took hours. So I think it's just the atmosphere, it's just unreal. Everyone I've kind of been speaking to that might be interested in doing a 10K, I'm like, do Highgate. It's great, it's amazing. Yeah, it's just such a good time. So yeah, heading down to do Highgate. And then yeah, kind of see where that takes me. I'd love to get a new PB. I feel like if I could run kind of yeah, close to 32 on the road, then fingers crossed with a bit more of like specific training, we can kind of dip under that. But it's always tricky. Like you never know on the day. I think it's going to be super fast, and I think people are definitely going to be, you know, chasing Olympic times, chasing European qualifying times. So it should be a really stacked race, which is good, but it could also be kind of messy and quite fast. And yeah, again, just got to kind of hold my own, I guess. It will be probably my first track race of the season. So pros and cons with that as well. But I'm hoping a bit of naivety might work.
And a lot of strength off the cross country season is not going to go
Yeah.
unnoticed for 25 laps around
Hopefully.
Highgate. But we'll be there on the night, so we'll grab you for an interview afterwards. Hopefully it's big smiles as you come through the interview zone, and
Yeah,
a new showing
fingers
PB
crossed.
as well. Hopefully,
That'd be
fingers
good.
crossed. So just quickly before we move on to kit run, Alice, can you give us an insight into what a bog standard cross country week of training is looking like right now? So, how many miles are you running? And just yeah, give us the lowdown as much as you're willing to.
Yeah, of course. I'm going to be really annoying. I'm not the kind of person that does like mileage. I mean, I work in K's, but I typically work in hours just because
I
I
like
also do a
that.
bit of hill. Yeah, I do quite a lot of hill running as well, so it just works well if I'm going out for a hill run. Like if I got told to do 10 miles on the hills, that could take me like 3 hours. So yeah, hours kind of work better for me. But I feel like it normally averages out to like just over 90K, just under 100, so kind of around that ballpark. Being kind of like 8 hours of training in total. But on a Monday it's just 70 to 75 minutes easy. I typically will do something kind of a little bit traily, or if it's not the nicest weather, just kind of keep flat and just grind out the miles there. And then on a Tuesday, these kind of longer tempos, somewhere between 45 minutes to an hour of just like tempo work. With like warm up and cool down, that normally leads to it being about 90 minutes or so. Wednesday is the exact same as Monday. I also do gym on a Monday and a Wednesday morning as well, which is just like an hour long. And then Thursday is a bit of a kind of top up tempo day, so that's what I did today down at the track
Good
into the
weather.
wind. So that's normally just kind of like 15 to 20 minutes of tempo. Pretty chilled, definitely not as fast as I would do it on a Tuesday. Like it's a little bit more kind of within myself, and then some kind of more ex I don't know, like more kind of strides that I guess are working on form for running as well, which yeah, they seem to work. They seem to have helped me get a bit of a kick that I didn't have before, so that's
Turnover,
good.
like
Yeah,
literally,
exactly. A
yeah.
bit of turnover, yeah. And then on a Friday is always a rest day. Saturdays intervals, on the grass normally. Just yeah, kind of anything that's somewhere between like 3 minutes, they can go up to like 10 minutes. It's just whatever it is. Normally a bit of a mix of different times, and that's again around 45 minutes to an hour. And then Sunday is just a long run, up to 2 hours normally. I try and go out to the hills or on the trails or something for that. Just keep it super easy and chatty.
And that trail slash hill runs, what's the thought process behind them? Is it because of the area you're living in, or is it particularly better for whatever stimulus you're looking for?
It's kind of just where I live. Like, Edinburgh has got some really nice hills and trails that are really close by, really good for running. We've got the Pentland Hills, which is kind of our local, like, regional hill area. And then Blackford and Braids, which is the kind of the more traily side of things. And it's just, I mean, it's probably because I just really enjoy it. Like I said, I do a bit of mountain running. I'll probably do a bit of mountain running later on in the summer as well. And I think it's good for building strength. In cross country, I think hills are definitely a lot of people's weaknesses. Whereas if it's a bit of a hillier course, I normally do just that a little bit better. Just because I'm used to kind of running hard off of a bit of an incline. And also like the downhills as well. I think people don't think that you need to train downhill, but it's like a completely different kind of running, especially if you're going up and down. Like, your quads take a bit of a battering. So, yeah, it's almost like a bit of strength training, like additional strength training. But it's mainly just because I enjoy it, just because where I live. And yeah, I just like running on the trails.
Yeah, downhill running is a different sport, listeners. I went to Morzine last summer for a week on a trail running retreat. I was working on it and I was out there with a load of trail runners, and safe to say that I was battered. I got absolutely dropped on the downhills. I went out for a run with my friend Lewis, who's a good runner himself, and I kept up on the uphill. I was like, this is all right. This is a cross country race. It's totally fine. On the downhill, oh, it was embarrassing. I just thought I might as well stop and walk. It would be quicker. I was like Bambi on ice. It was shocking. But it's good to hear that you mix it up. And I like that whole thing of working in time. I think a lot of runners could take some advice from that, that not necessarily always working to pace and mileage is the way for, depending on what you got on the training day that day.
Yeah.
But like, a 70-minute run is 70 minutes at X effort.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter whether you've, run 8 miles or not, or 10 miles or whatever. Do you know what I mean? I think that's a
Yeah.
really mature way of looking at training, which is great. I like that.
I think it's, yeah, for me, it's probably because of the kind of runs I do. Like, I like to mix it up between doing road and doing trails. So I think going off of time just makes a lot more sense. And yeah, you're probably right. Like, it means that I'm not kind of constantly looking down my watch, being like, oh, I've got 4 miles to go, or oh, I've kind of dropped off the pace a bit because like I could be running up a hill or I could be running downhill, or like you'd be going through trails and suddenly the GPS kind of goes, sort of thing. So it definitely means I just run for feel more than kind of constantly looking down my watch. And I think there's a time and a place for that. Like, on session days, I'm trying to hit times, I'm trying to run fast. But I think it means I just keep my easy runs so much easier, basically.
So let's talk Kit Run, Alice. There's a lot of people that are eager to hear about this brand. There's a lot of people that don't know a lot about it. For me personally, as an athletics geek, I was buzzing when I saw you signed, and it's everything I love about where the sport's going. If you think years gone by, you'd put on the Diamond League and there'd be like one brand on the start line. Whereas now we've got this array of brands and different coloured vests and shoes. I think it's awesome. So my question is, why Kiprun compared to brands that we see more commonly British athletes signing to?
Yeah, I think kind of like I said a little bit earlier, when I was kind of in conversations with other brands, there was a lot of questions around what's Alice going to do in the next kind of year or two. Like, is she going to run on the road? Is she going to run the trails? Like, is she going to be track? Does she want to go do marathon? All of this. And I just kind of was a bit overwhelmed with it all, because I guess I haven't quite decided exactly where I want to go. Like, I love trail running, I love track, and I love road. And I'm also still really young. So, kind of to suddenly say, like, I'm going to do a marathon, like, that seems a bit too much, a bit too soon. Whereas Kiprun was definitely more kind of very supportive of my trail ambitions, my road ambitions, my track ambitions, without basically being like, you need to run this time, we want you to make this team, you need to do this, you need to do that. It was very much like you are just moving out of essentially the junior age group. I know that under 23 maybe isn't seen as a junior age group, but like you're still really young. You're still kind of capped on, like, I guess, how far you can run. I think 10K is like the maximum distance. I mean, I guess you can do marathon and half marathon, but it's not there at like the European kind of champs level. So you're still super young, you're still basically developing, and they just seemed to understand that those first few years are really hard. It's really hard to break into, running fast times and being up with the kind of the top girls that have been there for years. So that just really appealed to me. It just felt like they genuinely cared about me as a person, almost before me as an athlete. They, I guess, were also this kind of new and exciting brand that, I went to the their HQ in France, and it was really nice. Like, I felt very much like I was made to feel a part of the family before I'd even kind of signed. Like, everyone was super chatty. They wanted to tell me about what they were making, what their ideas were.
And that was before you signed.
Yeah, this was before pen was put to paper, so it was pretty nice of them to kind of be so open with me. And yeah, I think just seeing the developments that they had, looking at some of the shoes, like, they have so much kind of knowledge behind them. Like, they've got a lot of really good people working for them that have worked for various other brands beforehand, and it's crazy. Like, I like shoes, but I'm definitely not kind of a running shoes geek. But I was looking at all these shoes, and it was literally like, one brand kind of ripped apart, taken and stitched with another one, and it was like they were making this kind of almost Einstein, or not Einstein, but like kind of like monster shoe or something. Like, it was just insane. Yeah, it was a cool experience. And then even since then, kind of since I've signed, like, the team is super supportive. The R&D is really like on it. If I've ever had any issues with any of the shoes, they really want to know. Like, it's not kind of like, oh, why are you complaining about this shoe? Like, we've done this, this, and this to it to make it the best it can be. They're like, oh, what's the problem? Okay, we're gonna fix it. Like, tell us exactly what this issue is, and we'll like make a prototype. You can try it out, and if that works better, then we'll consider like actually making a shoe that's more specific to that. I think that's the nice thing about going with a brand that's not kind of a market leader, because they have more time for the athlete. They want to build shoes to make athletes the best they can be, and basically build the brand around the athlete instead of just having athletes kind of fall into what is already created.
And even though the Kitrun are not a market leader here in terms of shoe brand, they are a market leader. Decathlon's the biggest retailer in the world. So when I was doing some research on Kitrun months ago, I was just like, they're a juggernaut. They are massive. Like it's like they've entered the world of Formula One. They've got all the tools. They've just
They have,
got to get them all in line.
yeah,
And
exactly.
it's really great to see that you're going to be a fundamental part of that. And I love that story about the fact you went out to France to the HQ and you hadn't signed yet, but they still made you feel welcome. And I think that just, if that doesn't tell you that someone wants you, then I don't know what does. So that's really nice to hear.
And it's like, even since then, like, the community, it's not like they were doing this to kind of get me on board. Like, the communication has just gotten better. The kind of the feeling of being part of that Kiprom family has just got grown stronger. Like, I get so many messages from after races, just from like everyone on the team congratulating me. And yeah, like I was saying, if there's been any problems with any shoes, they just want to know. They just want to fix it as quick as possible. And I think a few of the team is going to come out to Serbia, which is going to be super nice as well.
Yeah, that'll be a bit of a party, which will be lovely for you.
Exactly.
But let's talk kit. Let's talk tech. So Valencia 10K, when you ran your PB 32:04, you raced in the Carbon Racer, and I don't know whether they were out of embargo at the time. I'm not too sure, but I was very excited, and obviously the race went very well. Which model was that you was wearing, and talk us through that shoe, how they felt, whether you could give us any insight into how they felt different to other shoes you've worn previously.
Yeah, so that's the KD900 X2. So it's their kind of, yeah, their newest carbon shoe that they've brought out. I think they were bringing it out specifically for Paris, but obviously it was allowed from the beginning of the year. So yeah, I got to wear that for Valencia, which was super cool. Honestly, it just felt like I had like massive springs on my feet the whole time. Like I'm being serious when I say this, like I've never worn a more responsive shoe. And I still wear it now and it still feels super responsive. I've not worn it loads. I know that carbon shoes kind of have a bit of a lifespan on them, but it still feels the same. It still feels really responsive, really springy. I guess like I like the fact it's got kind of that classic like big stack, and it's, yeah, that kind of like cloudy kind of cushiony feel, which is really nice. And yeah, I mean, obviously it's always a risk wearing a shoe for the first time in like a big race like Valencia. So it gave me a huge amount of confidence that it paid off. Like literally had worn it for, I think like 2 strides the day before and was like, well, just going to have to go for it. and yeah, paid off big time. So I'm a big fan of that shoe. It will be super cool when it's like officially released. I think it's definitely going to rival, you know, some of the bigger brands out there. You can also definitely see where inspiration has been taken from, which is kind of cool as well. I think, again, like being such a new and upcoming brand, it's almost nice that they've taken bits from other shoe brands and made it their own. And it's, yeah, it's just cool. It's innovative. And I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I'm just reading up on the shoe now and just sort of relating to when you said about the R&D, which is, for listeners, research and development, who weren't sure what we're talking about, that the whole KD900X LD, have I got that right? Let me
LD, yeah,
there we go. I got it right first time. The first athlete that they signed, Johan Kowal, ran the Lille half marathon in 62 minutes in the previous edition, and then basically used him for testing. So then he did the London marathon in them as well. So it's really sort of backs up what you're saying about the brand not just investing money and time into R&D, but actually listen to their athletes, because that's like the most specific testing environment, the athletes that are going to be in them before they go to retail. You know, the amount of times I've seen shoes get discontinued and people are in uproar. They're like, they were the best shoes. Why have you got rid of them? So it's really nice to hear that a brand is listening to their elites, so that, you know, us mere mortals, when we get our hands on them, are going to be in the possession of a really, really good shoe.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, like, I was on a call with them earlier this week, kind of regarding the spike, because obviously they, at the moment, they just have one spike, and they're really keen to basically hear like female athletes' feelings towards the spike, because I think, you know, it's obvious, like, me and Abby, like, we're both small girls, like, we don't have a huge amount of kind of power behind us. You kind of, you know, you have then a man who's obviously going to be laying down a lot more power on the track. So it's about making sure that there's a spike there that we're going to feel it's just as responsive as like a male athlete as well. And they just, yeah, they want to make something that's going to be good for girls as well as for guys, which I think is pretty cool. Like, I'm a big fan of when shoe brands and companies in general just like really understand that there's a massive difference between male and female athletes, and they don't just try and like shoebox you into all buying the same one.
Could not agree more, Alice. Absolutely spot on there. So take us through your current rotation, so shoes across your training week, and how they differ depending on what type of training you've got for that day, and if you can give us any insight into how each of them feel.
Yeah, so my kind of go-to just easy mileage shoe is the KS900 too. Everyone says it looks like a cushion, and it feels like a cushion. Like, it's so comfy. I'm like, probably just the way that my feet are, like, I'm quite prone to getting blisters, and yeah, no issues with that at all in those shoes, which is nice. And I'm a big fan of the colorways there as well. They're all kind of pastely colors, which I love. So that's where I do, that's where I use for my easy mileage. And then if I'm doing something that's not like quite as fast as maybe like a proper session, like proper tempo work, then I use the KD900s. They're not carbon, they're just like, they're just really responsive. I think they, whatever foam they use, I think is the same what they use for their carbon shoe. It's just like super bouncy. It just feels like you've got springs on your feet. So you almost don't need that carbon plate in it. You just like, it's light, it's responsive. So I use that today on the track. And then yeah, for the sessions, I've been using my, the KD900Xs, which is, yeah, just their carbon shoe. So hopefully they'll release some more of them so I can get my hands on them soon.
For sure. I'm sure they'll be, you're going to be the first one that's going to get them out of, they're definitely going to get them to you before they're going to get them to some pleb like me. But I'm having a look at these, the photo of the KS900 now. And yeah, you are right. They do look like a pillow. They're
like
very soft.
Proper, like, yeah, squishy shoes, which I love. I think they're good for just easy mileage. And I've forgotten what the name of their trail shoe is, but I use that one for obviously all my trail runs. And again, like, it's got, for those who kind of care about like lugs and grip and stuff on wet rock, would recommend. They're good. They also don't wear down, which is ideal because, you know, often if I'm going and I'm doing a trail run or a hill run, there's a section of road beforehand, and you would think that would just completely kind of wipe out any kind of grip and lug depth. But they're pretty robust, so yeah, it's been good so far. I've been very like pleasantly surprised about kind of the quality of the shoes. And again, if there has been any issues with any of them, they're super responsive, which is nice.
And Kid Runners is now an employer. What's the support being like? I know you touched on how welcoming the family have been, but for our listeners, you know, I mentioned it earlier in the conversation, we just see professional athletes as these kind of like mortal athletes, these mortal people that are just amazing at running fast. But in actual fact, behind the scenes, it does differ from brand to brand, from contract to contract, from country to country. The support you gain, the access to different levers that you have, whether it's physio, nutrition, strength and conditioning, camps, etc., etc. What has your experience been so far with KitRun to this point? And yeah, I mean, how has it ultimately helped you improve not just your athletics, but also helped your whole life?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. They I don't know if you saw, but basically, I think it was the start of February, they announced their 42 house, which is in Kenya.
Of course I saw it, Alice. I'm a geek.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. So that's something that obviously I have access to if I fancy heading out to Kenya, which is definitely something I will probably take up next year. I've also met a few of the girls that live out there. They actually came over for the Valencia 10K and they were so lovely, which was really nice as well. They were kind of like, you have to come and visit. And you know, they're always like swiping up on stories, like for everything, which is really nice as well. So that's like a massive bonus that they have that out there. Looks pretty bougie as well. So I'll definitely be heading out. And yeah, in terms of the support, like, Antoine and Driss are kind of the two guys that I speak to the most. They're the kind of athlete managers as such. And they're great. They also are really responsive and kind of work really well with my own like management company at Centara, which is really nice. And I think like it's just nice to feel like everyone's mates with each other at the end of the day. Like it doesn't feel like there's any kind of bad blood or, you know, like having kind of like little scraps with each other over anything, which is really good. And yeah, like it's nice that they're so keen to kind of come out to competitions as well. I know that they were over in Glasgow actually for the indoor champs, which is pretty cool as well. So yeah, no, they're just like, they're super nice people, the super nice team.
Yeah, I love that. I'm looking at the 42 house now, and yeah, just the infrastructure just looks so professional. They've got sports directors, yeah, operation directors, coaches, mentors, and then obviously the athletes as well. But yeah, that, I think that's really cool. I really like it. I think there's so much that's going to come from Kit Run, but more importantly, I'm just buzzing that one of our British talents, but obviously you, because you're on the show, is going to be a part of it, which is really great to see. I suppose to end the conversation, Alice, one question I did have. You said earlier in the conversation that you have to do things outside of running, else you just get really bored.
Yeah.
What are your passions? What are your passions outside of running?
I'm a really outdoorsy person. Like, I love being in the outdoors. I think growing up in Scotland, it's hard not to kind of love the nature and the environment that we have here. Like, we have the Munros up north, which is pretty cool. So I've kind of, yeah, especially in the last few years, actually, probably since I came to uni, more so than anything else, I got really into just being in like the Munros and, yeah, hill walking, hill running. Got into climbing quite a bit last year as well, which is pretty cool. So yeah, again, when I go out and do some more kind of European mountain running in the summer, I'm hoping to do a bit of climbing out there as well. And then kind of outside of being like just, yeah, physically active, I'm a big fan of sports nutrition. As I said, like, I'm kind of studying a master's at the moment for it, which is good. I think, you know, it's like, it's a massive part of being an athlete, having good nutrition. I know that when I'm feeling myself right, I run my best. I also feel my best. So yeah, I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to anything new that people have to say, any kind of, yeah, new products that come out. I'm always like researching it, making sure that it's not just some sort of gimmick, which like 90% of the time it is, unfortunately. But that's marketing for you. So
you sound like Eddie Abu. He's crazy. He's absolutely hilarious.
He's good.
What's your opinion on Eddie Abu, Alice? Is what he says true?
Yeah, I mean, God, it's hard, isn't it? It's like, I think when you're an athlete, you do have to have some things that maybe aren't necessarily like,
you have to supplement.
Yeah, you have to. This is kind of the thing. Like, I'm very much like, you know, food first should be what everyone is aiming for. But if you're running like 100 mile a week, like, sorry, I'm going to struggle to see how you're going to get enough calories in, enough protein in, carbs, whatever, by just trying to eat your yeah, sandwiches.
Yeah.
So I think athletes need to almost be considered like completely separate to just general population when it comes to nutrition. I think supplements, you know, make sure they're obviously informed sport and everything. But yeah, there's definitely a place for supplements. I have them in my diet. There's also gimmicks out there with, you know, some supplements, but at the end of the day, it's whatever makes you feel good. If you feel like taking something is going to better your performance, and as long as it's legal, then yeah, go for it.
I like that.
Yeah.
I've got a question on nutrition. This would be a nice way to end. I have a friend of mine. Her name's Vic, and I'll make sure that she listens to this. And she hates eating her green vegetables. And I pile them on her plate every single night because I am the chef, and she never eats them. And she said, "Why can't I get one of those super greens that taste like,
oh God,
orange squash, something like that?" Right?
They don't taste that good, though.
I just said to her, I said, "There's no way that is coming in my house. I've been brought up on broccoli. There's no way I can allow that." But my question is, this super greens phenomenon, yeah, are they what they say they are? Are they a good substitute for vegetables? Surely not. Surely they're not.
It's hard. I think it's not going to, if you're taking it to try and fix something, then that's not what's going to fix it. Like, always go food first. You know, your body is going to be working at its optimum in a food first approach, because like, that's what our ancestors ate. They didn't have supplements and they were fine. So I think it's a very expensive way to drink green liquid. basically. I wouldn't take them. I think there's a lot of ways to make green vegetables taste really good, and that's probably a better way to kind
Saying
of
I can't cook.
look at it. No, I'm saying flavoring is key. Salt and pepper and other nice things.
Alice, I've tried so many things. I've seasoned it more than the seven spices from KFC. I can't get her to eat broccoli. I
What
don't know
you
what to
should
do.
do, tender stem broccoli is the goat of vegetables.
That
If
is
you bake
elite.
that in the oven, so good. With a bit of soya sauce, it's really nice.
Cool. I'll keep running. I'll paying you, well, if you're eating a stem still every
I
night.
just live too close to
Oh
Waitrose.
dear God, I'm feeling so skint right now. This is horrible. But no, you are spot on about tender stem. It is an elite
Is
vegetable.
elite.
Okay, Alice, that was such an amazing chat. Thank you so much for joining us on the Traxtor podcast.
Thank you.
Best of luck at World Cross. I will see you at Highgate, and we'll have a clap
Yeah.
clap and a chin wag, and hopefully a shiny new PB.
Fingers crossed. Thank you so much for having me.